This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Evening Edition. I'm Ezra Zayed. Over the past few years, corruption has had a starring role in almost every discussion about good governance. In a study called the Global Corruption Barometer, about 60% of Malaysians feel that the level of corruption has increased in 2017. The report by Transparency International also found that 53% of Malaysians feel that the current government isn't doing too well in the fight against corruption. When self-checks by government don't work, the role of the watchdog is usually carried out by the media, civil society, and the public. And that role is a hard one to fill, and often very tedious. You have to track numbers, read reports published by governments, and to listen to parliamentary sessions that often sound like this.
Dalam pelaksanaan satu bestari net fasa 2, bagi sekolah-sekolah di luar bandar termasuk di negeri Sarawak yang menggunakan teknologi asymmetric digital subscriber line dengan izin ADSL atau very small aperture terminal VSAT dengan izin, Kementerian Pendidikan Malaysia secara berkala membuat
pemetaan. That, for example, was a question session in Parliament on the internet coverage rate in rural schools in Sarawak. These types of discussions are important and do affect the lives of the everyday person. These sessions can be difficult and perhaps even boring, but there is a need to pay attention to sessions like these. But shouldn't there be an easier way? Keeping the government accountable would be easier only if the data, numbers, and the facts were presented in a way that's understandable and interesting. We've seen those colorful infographics on The Guardian, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal, for example. But there aren't many organizations out there who can do this. In Malaysia, one such organization is the Sinar Project. And today we speak to one of its founders, Khairil Yusof, about the work that the project does and the data that can be used to keep government accountable. Khairil, welcome to the show. And could you tell us more about the Sinar Project and what was it that got you interested and invested in this particular initiative?
Okay. First of all, thanks for having me. Basically, I think it first started around 2011 when there was a leaked draft of a computer professionals bill that was basically trying to get anybody who's doing work in IT to be registered before they can work. That was the first time a lot of us in the IT industry suddenly realized that these laws being passed in Parliament actually matter to, you know, how we live our lives and whether we can work or not.
If I remember correctly, there was a lot of pushback at the time, apart from the general public, but from IT professionals themselves.
Usually they have these kind of feedback meetings at Thursday afternoon in Putrajaya that nobody comes to. And so a lot of people actually took leave. So there's about, I remember there was a crowd of about like 300 people crowding into this small office, in Putrajaya for their feedback. That was got us activated into thinking like, you know, we need to monitor these things. So that was probably the initial start for us to at least to understand what are the laws being passed and actually visit parliament.gov.my for the first time in our lives. And then later on, as people, I think, got more politically activated, especially around Bursay 2, we found out that a lot of us actually went there individually. And then we thought, okay, how can we use our skills as IT people or for different backgrounds on making Malaysia a better place, like what can be done rather than just, you know, simply protesting every week or so. Yeah.
And I guess, you know, when you saw that leaked draft for that particular bill, I guess you were concerned about some of the things that you saw. And it, I guess, prompted this movement from yourself and a whole bunch of others. Do you think it's one of those circumstances where laws just essentially get passed and the public doesn't really get invested as much as they should be until it's too little too late?
Yeah, I mean, coming from a person who didn't care, generally, if it's not a problem, we generally just get on with our lives. I mean, you'll assume, for example, criminal laws are working okay. And it's only if there's an uptick in crime or something or where you suddenly get affected that you start worrying about these things. In a way, a lot of these things are quite boring. They're not interesting. And you kind of assume that our elected representatives are doing their jobs, which is reviewing these things to make sure that there are no problems. yeah, coming back to that, I think we need to care a bit, but I think only on the things that actually matter to us, because maybe 99% of it is generally boring legislative stuff that just keeps, you know, the government going and society going as a whole. Yeah.
So what was the key thing then with regards to Sinar Project? Was it a case that there was a lot of information out there that wasn't packaged in the right way for the public to consume? And how did you and your colleagues come in to, I guess, fix that?
So, yeah, I think that's the kind of our overarching goal is basically easier access. And what we learned, you know, initially starting from just looking at bills is that the whole system of government is pretty complicated. There is everything from legislature to budgets, to policy decisions, and then how it does it get passed to the different agencies, how do the contracts then worked out, and then what are the planning that goes on. So we found out it's like this is really complex things, and each one of them is, you know, it's called people dislike government bureaucracy for a reason, and that's the reason. It's just it's huge.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. And if you are a normal citizen who is not working in government, who's not a parliamentary aide, who's not a lawyer dealing with parliamentary or legislature, these sort of things are overwhelming. Like, you don't even know where to start. But at the same time, just like those little pieces of legislature, if you don't understand these things, then you can't have an opinion or you can't have a voice in terms of the things that could affect your life. So we looked at it and said, okay, how can we make this easier? So immediately we knew that, you know, that you can't, for example, deal with hundreds of documents. How can it be simpler? Can it be simplified? In the simplest way possible is that if I'm looking for something, can I just quickly Google it and get a result from it? Mm. And is that result the most relevant one? I mean, that would be the ideal. And then later on, the ease of access has so much dimensions to it. So that's at the very easiest stage. Can I find it?
So give me an example and walk me through the process of, you know, going through an overwhelming amount of information and data.
Yeah.
And then you and your colleagues have to get into the mess.
Yeah.
And I guess sort things out and package it in such a way that, as you mentioned, when a member of the public goes online and searches it, they can actually find the information they want on a particular issue, whether it's crime, whether it's a bill that's related to the economy, or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. So at the most basic part, what we realize is that if something's not electrical, one of the kind of theories that we have is that if something is not electronically accessible, as in you can't search for it online, immediately that's a huge barrier of access.
Yeah.
So at the very least, even if it's not in a fancy website or something, can I find it online? And then can I download it? So that's one of the easiest way to access. After that, then the next stage is, okay, so I've got 100 results now in Google. Before there was zero. How can the 100 results be more relevant? And that requires a little bit more difficulty because it requires that the government at least structure some of those documents. And unfortunately, it's not that well. So you can't quickly just search on crime and immediately get nice results based on crime.
What format does it appear in usually when you're looking at it in its raw form?
Okay, in its raw form, it's generally a PDF.
And is it a policy paper? It could be anything.
It could be anything.
Right.
It could be draft bills. It could be parliamentary questions and answers.
Mm.
It could be budget documents. So as a start, like I said, is it available? That's usually how we go. Like, is it there? If it's not there, how can we make it there? why isn't it uploaded online? So who has it? So the first step is to actually just make it available online. Sometimes we just email the different agencies.
And are they quite responsive to?
I've never actually got a direct response, but sometimes I see results 2 or 3 weeks down the line.
Is that right?
So a perfect example was the Auditor General's report. So they used to just upload the summaries, the executive summaries, and the media would report on these executive summaries. But after a visit to an MP's office, I realized that there's actually, you know, the full documents, which are about 680 pages or so.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
And so these actually contain all the different details, the photos and whatnot. Now, an ordinary citizen like me can't go around and carrying, you know, 600-page documents. So I just quickly fired off an email to, you know, through their contact form and said, you know, can you please put some of these larger reports online in addition to the ones that you already have? And lo and behold, a month later, they started uploading it for the initial ones. And I kind of left it at that. And just I think about 2 weeks ago, I looked at it again. It's like they've uploaded everything since 1999. So I was like, okay. I'm not sure if that's the direct result of my email or maybe some other queries. But yeah, we do engage with them and sometimes it helps.
But why was it important for Kyriel to look at those 680 pages of reports? What's in there that the summary of those detailed findings can't provide? We find out after this on the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the evening edition. I'm Ezra Zaid. Today, we're learning about the work that the Sinar Project does. Their aim is to keep the Malaysian government transparent and accountable through the use of open source technology. We're speaking to Kyriel Yusof, co-founder of Sinar Project. Earlier, he told us about a visit to one of the offices of a member of parliament and saw that there was a more detailed copy of the Auditor General's report. It was a 680-page document, and Kyriel saw value in that. But why exactly? What is it about the more detailed reports that can add more value to the work that he does?
Okay. Basically, it's usually complex two questions. One question leads to another question leads to another question. The answers are usually a lot more complex than, you know, simple things. This politician's not doing his job, or I think it's a crony job, or something like that.
Right.
So what we've learned is that, for example, a bridge isn't built. So you'll have an auditor report that says, okay, this bridge was delayed for 8 years. It was given to a company and that company did not complete it.
Right.
And yeah, and that's generally what you get out of the short-term media coverage of it. But if you look at the initial report, it will actually say all the different processes of the government. How was the contract initially given out? Was it direct tender? Was it open tender? And sometimes you actually find out in the process that sometimes it's not even the company's fault for the delay. It could be some process in the plans. It could be a delay in approvals or a delay in payments. And actually, those things are all covered in the Auditor General's report. So when you want to fix problems like that, so, okay, as a citizen, let's just imagine that I need that bridge to cross, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I've been waiting for 8 years, right? So I want answers, like why did the bridge take 8 years to be built? And if you want to solve those problems, shouting and just being angry doesn't really help to solve the problem. Being able to understand why allows us to do, you know, allows us as a public to be more constructive in our criticism rather than saying, oh, look, this politician's bad or this party is better than the other party. It actually sees us from a more complete view and say like, okay, these were the processes that were bad. Okay, now you ask your MP a more direct question. What's being done to rectify these problems so that we can have a better bridge? We can have a bridge in a shorter amount of time next time, right? Yep.
You know, this entire project sounds really fascinating, but it requires a lot of hands on deck. Because there are so many different issues that you can choose from, and for some areas you might have a lot of data, in other areas not so much. How do you pick and choose your battles so that you can actually make some sort of meaningful progress?
Okay. I think the best way, I guess, is we're on BFM. it's like a business analogy is pretty, it's actually pretty good.
Sure.
So the way I usually put it as an analogy is investing in a company. In this case, you're both the consumer and an investor in the company. So usually when you need to know how well the company is running, you want to see the reports of the company. You want to see who the management is. And then you want to kind of have real time or as close to as real-time data on the updates of how the company is running. And then at the end of it, because you're also the consumer, you want to see how good is the service of the company and how can I improve the company that I'm also an investor in. Yeah. It's a little bit weird. But so we do the same thing with government. So we have to look at, okay, so now what's the management of this company? So that would be usually the elected representatives and also the existing government. We would look at what's their track record, what's their CV. So that's the basic part, like who are our managers, basically, of this country. And then we look at the fiscal measures, like what's the budget, how are they spending these things? What are they investing in? Is it more on health? Is it more on education? Are these things the same things that I want? And finally, we try to look at, are there anything here that measures the quality of service after they've invested in these things? So education, that's still huge. So in order to reduce that, so basically for us, we then concentrate, okay, let's start with Parliament first. That's at least a little bit more feasible. Let's look at the federal budget. Let's look at their policies and their budget. So we start from there first. So that's the most basic part. I think that's on from the parliamentary level first. Yeah.
And I guess, is it a case that, you know, when you compare to, I guess, other countries, maybe in the region or in other countries around the world, this sounds like the job of what government should do in itself, in that they should be able to provide the information and data that is actually in a format that's – what am I going to say? It's in a format that can actually be digested by the public at large. But in fact, you're I'm not sure if you're an NGO or you're a business organization that's actually doing all the heavy lifting to ensure that the public actually gets all the information that they should be reading.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean – so that's the kind of thing that, you know, as an NGO, we're hoping that actually we won't be needed
for a lot of these things. Yeah.
And sometimes you kind of have to, so part of our goal is that, you know, can we poke the government to do some of these things? If they're able to do these things, then we can focus on the other parts. So there's still always going to be ongoing problems. But quite often, before government starts doing these things, one of the problems that we have is that actually it's partially also due to lack of demand. And this, there's no quite, you know, cause and result of these things. If there's no demand, then the quality of the, you know, you, like you said, then there's no reason to put it up online. If it's not online, then there's no demand because nobody has it, right? So so in a way, in the sense that some of our work here is kind of trying to break this a cycle where we're hoping it's like, okay, look, here it is. If it's made more accessible, look, there's going to be more demand for it. And then now the government can see the demand and says, look, maybe we should improve these services that we're providing and, you know, actually start uploading these documents because people actually want to access them now. Yep.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Do you think that this is because perhaps the Malaysian public is accustomed to a lack of transparency when it comes to the free flow of information of what the government does and does not provide? Or is it the case that actually the government does provide it, but the public just doesn't seem to be looking in the right areas? What's your take on this?
Actually, this thing about, you know, people being more concerned about what the government is doing, partially it's kind of related to my take on it is that it's kind of related to the free press. If you don't have a free press questioning these things, then there's no interest in the answers for these sort of questions on what a government is doing. Or if that right now, in, for example, in Malaysia, if the government announces, oh, we're going to spend $250 million on these new schools, the media tends to answer, the government is going to spend $250 million in new schools.
Yeah. Nobody's, it's almost like a parrot rather than something that actually questions the source.
So nobody is actually asking, okay, so it's $250 million in which areas? Why is it $250 million? What problem is it addressing? Why are you suddenly spending $250 million? And if they're saying that it's because we didn't have enough schools, why didn't we have enough schools? So these kind of questions are not being asked. So traditionally, I believe that before smartphones and before Google, going back, these sort of questions were asked by the traditional media. You would, in other countries, you would actually see in the newspapers and whatnot. And these, you know, people would know about these kind of issues from the media. I think the part where SINA comes in and also a lot of other efforts like in the US and UK on, you know, websites and civil society wanting to have these answers now is I think it's the shift to the digital world where we have Google now and we don't wonder about these things anymore. We want to type a Google search and we want it now, right? Whereas before you're like, okay, what's the budget? Okay, we'll wait for somebody for a week to go to the library, download it and produce a report in the paper as a special feature. I think part of that change is also this, I want it now. And if I can find everything, I can also find everything on the government right now in a nice little chart as the first result in Google. So I think that's the change as well. So partially it's To kind of summarize it, partially it's the lack of media doing the questions. That's kind of the awareness part. And then I think the other part of it is the move to, you know, this society to having, you know, mobile phones and always online access to internet, where we demand answers and we expect to find answers immediately.
Yeah. Well, I must say that I think in more recent years, the Auditor General report and I guess the frequency in which it pops up over the course of 12 months, I think that's been encouraging. But at the same time, I'm wondering about, you know, the different ministries and agencies and different bodies. Is one more data friendly than another, or is it a case where it's pretty much flat in terms of the type of data that you're looking for across?
Okay, so when it comes to measuring these things, we usually look at international standards. How does the international community, or is there any kind of organization doing these surveys? You know, for example, you'll have like the World Bank on, you know, GDP and or UNDP on development issues. So in this case, there's actually an organization called the World Wide Web Foundation that does work on open data. And they have this thing called the Open Data Barometer. And the Open Data Barometer measures for just like, you know, there's a Corruption Perceptions Index for Transparency International. The Open Data Barometer measures what is the level of availability of data in I think about 15 different key sectors, and then checks it against each country. So currently in Malaysia, for the 15 sectors that we have, we're doing quite poorly actually. For most of them, we're getting scores of about 15 out of 100, where 100 is top marks. So for a good example is that we have limited legislative data or information. We have almost limited data on crime. We have limited data on government budgets and expenditures. So yeah,
everything you're saying here is like super important on every level, yet we have such limited data on this.
Yeah, so yeah, actually one of the most scary things for me is actually the lack of government expenditure information. At least on the smaller scale, you only get these broad ones, and it's only like a year after or 2 years after that you actually get the actual expenditures. And yeah, so these are all important information. And so as long as we don't have these key information, at least in public and in a data format, then, you know, developers and companies, whether private sector or NGO, can't develop these applications to get you answers on these information because it's just not there in the first place.
I'm speaking today to Khairil Yusuf, the co-founder of SINAR Project. And now the SINAR Project requires a lot of time, effort, and funds, but the latter, well, that's running out. We're at the risk of losing all the work that they've done and also all the data they've collected so far. How sustainable is this project exactly? After this, we talk more about the project and how the public can contribute to it. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back to the Evening Edition. I'm Ezra Zayed. We're talking about SINAR Project today and its co-founder, Khairil Yusuf. Khairil, should there be a limit on the quality and quantity of the data that is shared by the government?
See, the data that's been generated by the government is nothing new. If you go back even, let's say, a decade, this is basically how government functions. They collect data. So it's an example for, let's say, just health. They'll collect data or on like how many kids are born this year, for example. Let's use education. How many kids were born this year? So the National Registry Department collects that information, as they have always done. Mm-hmm. And then the Ministry of Education, maybe in conjunction with the Economic Planning Unit, will look at how many kids were born and say, okay, in 7 years' time, these kids are going to be in school. So in our plan, for let's say the next Malaysia plan, we're going to need to, you know, from this data that we've collected from different agencies to formulate a policy. And the government has always done that. From what I've seen, has done it in a pretty good quality. You can see it actually in annual reports. So all they need to do now basically is share this data, not in 600-page volumes of PDF, like books or PDFs, but as in terms of spreadsheets, which is part of what the open data is, as like, you know, accessible spreadsheets that can easily be used by journalists, by researchers, or by, you know, software developers to make it more accessible.
In this era of post-truth, do you find yourself fact-checking data, or are you, or do you spend more time actually repurposing a lot of the raw data into something a little bit more digestible?
Okay, I think it's more on finding it more digestible, because if you have the data in a more digestible format or searchable format, you can quickly fact check. So a quick problem in Malaysia that happens all the time that I see that is when there's an announcement, for example, when there's a disaster or something. So you'll see this government announced $50 million to build new homes from the floods. Where did that $50 million come from? Which budget? If it came from a budget, what's $50 million now not being able to spend on? So, and the fact check here is not so much as is $50 million spent. Okay, we're going to assume that that's correct. The fact checking here is gone. Where did it come from? Which budget was it? And does it have an adverse effect on anything else? Did they take this $50 million from a fund to build new roads, for example? So maybe now you've fixed houses, but now you don't have roads, right? So that's the level of, I think, not so much whether it's true or not, but, you know, like the more details on what exactly where it is, right? Yep.
So, Kyrill, I guess with all of this great work that you're doing with Sinar Project and trying to, I guess, do all the heavy lifting for members of the media and the rest of the public and taking a lot of this complex data into more searchable formats, who are the regular users of this data, apart from members of media and the public? I mean, is that who you're looking towards? Are think tanks or are business organizations tapping you and saying, hey, this is some great stuff that we can now use to make better informed decisions?
Yeah. So, I mean, at this time, the users would be these people who are interested. So, you know, like journalists, researchers and whatnot. And actually, that's a pretty good first step for us because it means, for example, a common user for some of our work is actually researchers for MPs or member of parliament. Mm. So if they can quickly find this information on budgets and whatnot, it helps them formulate better policies and better answers in parliament. So that's actually a pretty good step. Then again, I was talking about, you know, the role of the media. So again, if the media has better access to these numbers, you'll be able to fact check, you'll be able to ask questions. And maybe, I think as in the last budget, able to, for example, put visuals so that people understand it easier, right? So
infographics and videos always catch the attention, right?
So this cannot be possible if you don't have access to information. So so sometimes we feel that, you know, we quite often don't need to reach out directly to the public. If it has an impact through intermediaries, if the media can do a better job from this information, if MPs can make a better policy. And then again, even for, let's say, the applications, for example, to find MP or mobile apps, if the data that we have is good enough such that people can make mobile apps from it, you can even sell it. That's fine with us. and it provides a useful service. That's actually a good thing. But for that part where, you know, where people are able to build mobile apps and so on, we're not there yet because there's still some data, key data that's missing that's stopping us from stopping developers from building those sort of applications.
And in terms of areas of interest, are you observing a trend where people are gravitating towards, whether it's, as you mentioned, health or education or data related to crime? Is there a particular trend that you've seen?
It depends. It changes over time. I mean, we've been doing this for about, 4 or 5 years now. So it changes depending on the environment. So, for example, a few years ago, snatch thefts and crime was a big issue.
That's right.
So suddenly everybody, like, wants crime stats. So there's a demand on crime stats. And we were telling people that there is no crime stats. And we can only, the best that we can give it is through parliamentary documents. So now the current trend is on, sexual assaults of children, for example. So predators and whatnot. Again, people are asking it. And we actually have some of those answers in our parliamentary documents, including statistics that were not available elsewhere.
And especially in the area of crime, I would imagine that you know, as you mentioned, you're looking through parliamentary documents on these related stats. But I imagine an institution like the police force would have an incredible amount of data that hasn't been crunched down into more bite-sized formats.
Yes, and I don't know the reason for why they haven't disclosed this. So that's just specific for crime. I think crime could be a little bit sensitive.
Sure.
I'm not, you know, maybe there's some security issues there that maybe, because sometimes it's not just political will. We've seen it with like some developing countries. Sometimes there's no technical ability to actually get this data out. So for so let's say you're collecting statistics from students from all around the country. So that's millions of students. Sometimes there's a difficulty in a technical ability to actually get this out into the bytes SF because, you know, government is so big. So it could be a similar issue with PDRM as well. But again, they should do this there because by doing it, you can do extremely good what they call civic technology applications, which are applications that are for the public good. So, for example, in the city of Oakland, the U.S., the police department there actually publishes. It's not an up-to-date list. I think it's about 3-day delay or about a 1-week delay.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah. I think we can live with a 3-day or a 1-week delay.
So a 1-week delay of crime in Oakland City or the Oakland area. And what some commercial developers have done, not an NGO, is actually build an application that they sell to, I think, the city, where they collect all this information out and actually map out where the crime is.
And all the hotspots.
Yeah, and all the hotspots. So it shows, like, you know, crime in downtown city goes higher when everybody goes back home from the central business district and so on. So that's helpful for people. It's helpful for business. And it's also actually helpful for the police as well to see which areas are. So, yes, the benefits are quite clear across all different sectors. So I'm hoping that slowly by now, I think agencies like MAMPU, the Modernization and Planning Unit in the government policy, as well as, for example, AMDEC in terms of for software developer and businesses, IT businesses, they're now kind of pushing this agenda. But it's still quite new. It's only been about a year. So hopefully I can see more trends in which the government's actually opening up more data so that these things can happen. Right?
Now, Kara, correct me if I'm wrong. A lot of this great work that you and your team are doing, you know, how is this sustainable as an organization? Explain that to me. And of course, one of the main reasons you're here is that having read in one of the pieces on the Malay Mail Online is that the organization is running short on funds. And this is a recurring theme, I guess, because you guys aren't traditionally a business, right? You're not selling your data. You're just making it publicly available.
Yeah.
So what are your... What are some of the needs that you're looking at and how do you hope to make this sustainable in the long run?
Okay. Just as we issued you before, we said, like, isn't some of these things supposed to be done by the government? So certain things are not sustainable in a sense that – so the goal of, for example, for our goal is not to make money. The goal is for these things to happen, you know, better parliamentary access and so on. So certain things, ideally, if the government does it, will no longer need to be done. So that part can just go away. It's not needed anymore. But in terms of the sustainability of funding, it's like I often look to the U.S. to show people what happens there, and especially with Trump and so on. I think this is a really good eye-opener, including for me as a Malaysian, to learn exactly how things work in the U.S. in terms of, you know, the support that people have for certain issues. So right now, we're heavily dependent on foreign donors, interestingly enough. I think about 90% of our funding is actually from foreign donors. What we'd like to see, and this is actually quite common with other NGOs, especially for transparency and rights in Malaysia.
Absolutely.
We're not unique in any way in that sense. I think what we've seen from the U.S. is that, okay, when people are concerned about certain things, I think people should support or fund the things that they are of interest in, whether it's anti-immigration, whether it's ACLU for rights of, you know, immigrants. And I think in Malaysia, we might need to do that a bit more so that, you know, organizations such as ours are not dependent on foreign, but actually be more closer to doing the work that is funded and demanded by the Malaysian people. So
by our own respective communities, right? So look, I mean, you know, there are listeners out there, whether they're in the IT industry, whether they're whether they're just concerned members of the public, how can they help Sinar Project? How can they contribute? Because I think it's imperative that, you know, in a time when there's just so much noise about information, it's so important that we still stick to the facts, that we still stick to a very strong signal of how we make some of these policies. How can they help?
Well, I mean, for individuals, for example, that's, you know, you generally, one is to actually use the information that creates demand. So if you start accessing the information, calling your MPs, so even if, like, even for that, at that stage, you generate the demand for these sort of information. So that's a good thing. We keep hearing that, you know, a lot of media or researchers or journalists are using these. So if they're these kind of organizations, it would be great if they, you know, for example, chip in to help out. It can be researchers themselves collaborating to make it more easier, putting their time in. It could be, for example, them partially funding it to make sure that it's available online. Or they could actually build more things out of it. Again, it's to create this demand so that maybe for now, in the short run, we have to do these things by generating demand. But I think in the long run, some of these things hopefully will be done by the government. And in that sense, as an NGO, we'd probably shift away from doing these very mundane tasks and into maybe more critical things such as, you know, government transparency or going into detail on budget anomalies and so on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carol, I wish you and your team at Sinar Project all the best of luck. It's terribly important work that you do. And we hope that this won't be the last conversation that we'll have with you on this particular topic. We hope to see you again soon.
Okay, thank you for having me.
That was Kyril Yusuf, co-founder of the Sinar Project. If you're interested in the work they do and would like to contribute, you can head over to their website, sinarproject.org. That's sinarproject.org. Now, if you know of someone who would appreciate this conversation, someone who perhaps works in tech or deals with a lot of data, they can download the podcast and they can find it on our BFM app, and that's available for iPhone and Android. You're listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.